This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and it is Saturday morning, the 3rd. Is it the 3rd of July?
Yeah.
Yeah, of September we are. And that picked up Banachek from the airport. He's going to be lecturing this afternoon, performing tonight, but I'm here right now with the talent coordinator who had arranged all of this stuff. Actually, the former talent director of the former Magic Island. Mm-hmm. I'm Scott Hollingsworth. Scott O.
Hey, good morning, Scott. So glad to see you. We're running a short timetable here today, and glad that you could be with us and help introduce the lectures that we have lined up for the program. We have 7 lectures, and so far the programs are going real well, and your voice introducing these guys is just fantastic. You know them personally because you book and handle them so much that...
Some of the lectures that we've got lined up, we just had yesterday David Heyer, and then last mm-hmm. night Stuart yeah. McDonald, we had Harry Allen. Oh, there's 3 mm-hmm. already, so... And we're getting ready here now for Saturday morning and having Ice McDonald, who will be our 4th lecture. I got somebody else. Who else is going to be lecturing?
Well, we got Banachek, naturally, following him.
Yep.
And then later on, we will have Danny Orleans. Is also lecturing on his fabulous children's show. Mm-hmm. And then we have Dal Sanders doing his program that he's talking about.
That's going to be a workshop also.
This is a workshop. It sure is. And talking about workshops, Stuart McDonald had a workshop last night on his lecture program, which was just fantastic. And then Fun Shows of Fun Shows was C.J. Johnson's game show. Mm-hmm. It went over fantastic last night. And it's all coming together just real well.
Yeah. Yeah. As a talent coordinator at the Magic Island, I know that you were kind of under the gun week to week to get people, the right acts booked mm-hmm. that you know that the people are going to like. And this is one of those things that you have a lot of us from the Magic Island
sure.
who had worked there at some point or another mm-hmm. who you're kind of bringing back. Was that kind mm-hmm. of the vision that you had for this?
Well, when we took this convention, it was going to be a small convention, and I thought, what could we have a hook, sort of kind of promote it and act like it was something special without bringing in top names mm-hmm. that we couldn't afford, to be
yeah.
honest with you.
It's hard to compete with Magic Life when the guys are in Vegas.
Had 5 major conventions around yeah. us this last 2 months, and so I thought, why don't we just reminisce the days of Magic Island? And so tonight will be our Magic Island Gala.
And you'll be hosting.
Yeah, I'll be hosting that, and we have 6 performers on stage. And they all appeared on the stage at one time at Magic Island. And then we have the close-up Magic Island performers working the lunch buffet today and the lunch buffet tomorrow. And the evening cocktail hours that we have here at the hotel, they've given us a room for us to have an evening of fun and festivity and after-hours parties. Mm-hmm. And last night it went over real well. A lot of people enjoyed that.
Had a cash bar in there and
cash
everything.
Cash bar, so yeah, it was mm-hmm. real fun. And a lot of magic being done in there. So it's just a fun time, and I've tried to make this magic, magic, magic. And all my good friends from Magic Island from those days have helped me out and couldn't appreciate it. C.J. Johnson with all of his equipment has just stepped yeah. right in and helped out. David Thomas. And it's just been a big family convention.
That's true. You hit on a good point. It's being just a lot of fun at this convention because a lot of people don't belong to clubs because they don't like the club politics or the fact that you got to sit through meetings or whatever like that. And certainly, yes, the Texas Association of Magicians is an organization, mm-hmm. and we do have meetings that are going to be for the board and everything. And those who attend this convention, I think you pay $5 or $8 mm-hmm. that goes towards your membership, basically, in the TAOM, and so mm-hmm. that makes you a general member. And we do have a general meeting, but the point is we don't have meetings like they do club meetings necessarily. Necessarily. So in other words, that when you come to the convention, yes, you can attend one of those meetings, but that's not, a requirement. That's usually something that's outside of when we actually do magic.
Sure, sure.
This is for fun, and it is family, and you are welcome as a family. And I've had people who have come here for the first time who I know I first see them standing by themselves, and then mm-hmm. people walk up to them and start talking, yeah. and suddenly they become family. So I know yeah. they'll be back again.
Oh, sure. We just saw that last night. We've got some public seats for sale, and we've opened it up to the public as well, and in doing so, some of these people have bought all three night tickets. I mean, they bought last night not knowing what the rig was all about, but after seeing the shows, they're coming back tomorrow night.
There's some high-quality stage contestants, sure. Junior and a senior.
Both of them. And I was just really surprised last night with the contest act that we had. And
how was the contest this morning? I had to go pick up Banachek at the airport. How was the close-up contest?
The contest is really good. These were all local people who just maybe getting started in magic, and this is their first competition type of thing. And I thought the two that I set in were just unbelievable. It was just a fun time, those 2 hours of watching these guys. Each room they got a little bit better, a little bit better.
Yeah. It's been a good convention so far, and we really haven't been here 24 hours yet. Yeah. And this is going to be the first full day of activities and everything. And I'm glad to pull you aside a little bit here for a few moments. And thank you for doing such a good job. And I'm looking forward here to seeing Ice and then Banachek. And then, of course, lunch today. We got the Magic Lunch.
Mm-hmm, sure. Yeah, we do. We have that. That'll be wonderful because it's all the Magic Island guys will be there doing close-up magic at the table. These are the stars on the stage as well as close-up stars. And it's going to be a lot of fun, a lot of handshaking and getting to meet the public.
Yeah, one of the people had called me actually in advance, said, what is this luncheon for $20? Yeah. And I said, well, it's supposed to be a magic luncheon. Well, yeah, it's not like a magic luncheon they normally have, in which there might be a magician or two. They're going to be like 8 or 10 of us, kind of. Mm-hmm. So you'll be 2, 3, 4 people at your table throughout the time.
Yeah, there were going to be 80 people in the room for lunch that signed up for today and who bought the tickets. And in that period of an hour and a half to 2 hours, they're going to see a lot of close-up magic because I've got at least 8 to 9 close-up magicians that are just pouncing on each table.
Right.
Okay, because that's basically what we're about with this luncheons each day. It's too far away to have everybody leave and go to eat lunch and then get back here. So why not just have all the lunches right here? So we made up this program to do just that.
And they're going to have a buffet, which is going to be different today.
Yep. It's different tomorrow. Yeah. Today is going to be a big fajitas day deal, and tomorrow will be prime rib and a bunch of stuff like that.
Great.
I leave that all to Judy.
Yeah. And she's done a good job on her side. Well, thank you, Scott, again.
Well, thank
very
you
much.
Very much.
Appreciate
I know you're looking forward to introducing Ice McDonald for our next lecture program.
Got to get started.
Thank you very much, and best of luck.
Thanks a lot. And same to you then, Scott O. And for the Magic Island, Magic Word Podcast, that was Scott Hollingsworth, and this is Scott Wells saying, Scotty out. All right, Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and we're still here on Saturday the 3rd of September, not July, I think I said earlier, in a conversation I have with Scott Hollingsworth, and now I'm here with one of the stars and part of the talent who lectured last evening and also was in the evening show, Stuart McDonald. Hi there, Stuart.
Hey, how are you?
I'm
great to see you, Scott.
And good seeing you then as well.
Thank you.
I was going to say, you weren't at Abbott's this year.
Not as a performer, but as an attendee, you know, for 30 years.
I was going to say, I thought you attend all the time.
Oh, all the time, yeah.
Because you're from Michigan.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, how far away are you from Colon?
75 miles.
Okay. So, do you go to Marshall, Michigan very often to
Not really,
that museum?
No. Yeah, but I mean, I've been there a few times.
Yeah.
But I kind of keep it as a little hidden treasure that, I'll go there every once in a while.
But when you have friends visit, do you ever take them down there?
No, not really. No,
okay.
I haven't done that yet.
Okay.
I'm keeping it kind of, I know that I should, but my life has been so darn busy.
Doing what? What have you been doing?
Well, I work full-time for Whirlpool right now.
Okay.
And I make all their online videos for self-help videos and also training videos. I'm in the training development at the headquarters in Benton Harbor.
And so, when you are doing those videos, are you working out of the house then, basically?
No, I work for the corporation.
In an office? You got that.
Okay. I work right at headquarters.
So they've got a studio and everything then for your...
Yeah, that's nice. I actually built the studio for them.
How nice.
Yeah. So it's a fun
thing. Well, speaking of building things, you built apparently a new act. The act I saw last night, which was phenomenal.
I love that mirror thing where you're producing things
and everything. Let me just basically say that was... it's not a spoiler alert because that's the bulk of your show. It seems like that you're producing things from a mirror that they're duplicating, basically.
Right.
How'd you come up with the idea?
I came up with the idea. We're standing in our bedroom, and there's a floor-to-ceiling mirror attached to a door to our closet.
Yeah, okay.
And I just had a ball on a counter, and I was like looking at the reflection. I put my hand behind the ball and the reflection, and I'm looking at the reflection. There's nothing in this hand, but the reflection has a ball in it. So I put a ball in the other hand. I was like, hey, Lord, come here, take a look at this. And I went, and I think I taped the ball to the back of the mirror, and I just went, boom, boom. And she goes, that was so weird.
And you're like, ah, yeah, this could be an act.
Exactly. That's how it started, was right from there. Yeah.
Well, I noticed also that one of the things that the way your act started was that you were in like Harry's Magic Shop or something, and don't touch this and don't touch that or whatever.
Correct, yeah.
And obviously that this was magic happening and you were walking away with the money.
Yeah, right. And it's like I didn't understand anything that was happening. So this
kind of a Cardini type of a thing where a drunk magician, like, this happens.
Yeah, it just happens. I come into the shop and I have no idea what any of this stuff is, and so I do what anybody else would do. Mm-hmm. I kind of peek where I'm not supposed to peek, and then things just start happening, and then I discover this mirror, and the mirror duplicates things, and the hat slides across the table. I look in the hat, and the book, you know, is connected with it, and the book tells me how to get to the money in the hat, and then it just all goes from there, and then bags of money come from nowhere, and then a shower of money from the bags. It's fun.
Yeah, it is very fun. It's a very, very good act. Now, unfortunately, I was back uploading the podcast last night, so I missed your lecture. Tell me something about the workshop. I haven't talked to anyone who can give me some details other than somebody, Scott Langsworth, earlier said that was a fantastic workshop. What did you do? What did you talk about?
Well, I actually talked about the act. I expose everything.
Oh, okay.
I tell everybody how it's done.
Darn, you have to tell me later.
Yeah, okay.
And I got an idea, but I'm not sure.
Okay.
It fooled me.
it's funny. That act, the mirror thing fools everybody I've talked to.
Yeah.
And the thing is that I want to make this, because my journey is to go to FISM. That's the whole goal of this.
Well, I thought I saw you at Italy last year. Were you not there?
No, I was not at Italy.
Okay. Nope. There were so many people, I just kind of all blend together. I thought you were there. So you want to go to South Korea?
I want to go to South Korea. I started this act in 2013, and by 2014...
This particular act?
This particular act.
Okay, because I know you had other acts that were really phenomenal, too.
Thank you. Well, and this one...
that are award-winning. In fact, at the AAM, you won Best of Show here a few years ago.
Yes, with this act.
Oh, was this act? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep, and this act has changed so much.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, I have different iterations, and this act will change over the next year. As we approach the FISM qualifier.
So it's going to be the FISM qualifier, is that at the combined convention?
Combined convention,
okay,
yes.
In Louisville.
Okay. Now, the whole part of this of the lecture is about goal setting and not fearing failure and all of those things, because I competed in the combined in St. Louis and failed miserably.
How long ago was that?
That was in 2014.
14, okay.
And then 30 days later, that's when I won TAOM, because I paid attention. You know, I sought other people out, like Gene Anderson, and he said, do this, do this, do this, try this, try this. And 30 days later, I won the TAOM.
And you took your failure, and rather than just kind of melting into a depression, you decided to go
for it. Oh, no, that gave me a fire. It's like, okay, now this is a puzzle that needs to be solved.
So you're encouraging other people to do the same.
I want the culture in our country to change, in our craft in America, to change, so that as we're developing, we're sharing at the same time, because how often is it that, you know, two people are coming up with the same idea, or they're copying each other, but you're not copying each other if you're kind of collaborating with each other and coming up with helping each other advance the craft. Because if you're just in your room, you're only taking in ideas that are coming from yourself, and we can't really do all of that on our own. So my idea is just expose the process. And the process to me is the most fun, because the journey to the end, because I might get a big punch in the face, you know, when I compete at the combined convention, that might happen.
Yeah.
But I'm having so much fun doing all of these iterations and creating and making new magic. I've never created magic in my life like this, and inventing.
Yeah.
And I want to share that portion of it. And so I'm sharing that enthusiasm with everybody and just saying, look, I don't want you to copy the act, but this is
the
joy. The joy that I feel, I want you to feel that as well.
Yeah.
And so I'm kind of opening that conversation.
That's interesting, because that David Hirer's lecture was talking about the joy of performing and sharing that. And there is another joy that you're talking about, is the creative process. And I have to agree with that. Like when I'm working on a trade show beforehand, to me, I absolutely love trying to come up with the different ideas and how I can weave magic into their message, as opposed to the other way around.
Yeah.
You got to know the message, first of all, in trade shows, because that's what they're there for. Magic is just a vehicle. And so I really relish that, which is a creative process of script writing, you know, basically. Mm-hmm. And you're talking about, you know, trying to build an act, one thing that flows to the next, and making logical sense, which yours does.
Yeah.
And so you're finding joy with that.
Yeah. And a really interesting thing happened along the way. I'm asking questions, other people saying, okay, challenge me. How did this make you feel? Mm-hmm. And I know that you don't know, if I'm talking to somebody who's not related to magic, I say, if there's something that you want to have happen in the act, tell me, and I'll see if I can make it happen.
Hmm.
And that has happened so many different times because I get backed into a corner and I'm like, oh, okay, I got to fight my way out and make this trick happen.
Exactly.
And one of the questions I asked was I wanted to, there's this guy who is Tobin Ost. Tobin Ost is a Tony-nominated scenic designer on Broadway, but he's from my hometown of Adrian.
Mm-hmm.
He's this really big, big, big dude. On you know, everybody goes to him for.
He's the guy.
Yeah, Newsies. That's okay. What he got famous for.
Oh.
So anyway.
The play or the movie?
The both.
Wasn't there a movie? Okay.
Yeah, and so I said, Tobin, I'm doing this, and I want to compete in the world competition, magic, and da 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 da. And he said, call me right now. And so I called him, and he said, Stu. When I was in the sixth grade, you had me up on stage to do the rope trick.
Yeah.
And that was my first introduction to theater. I owe you because you're the one who exposed me to theater
wow,
for the very first time.
Wow, that make you feel great.
Yeah, and so he's helping me out for free.
Yeah.
And so I have a Tony-nominated scenic designer that's
helping you with your routine.
Clean up stuff. He's not coming in and saying, okay, you got to do this.
He's
just helping clean it up.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And it's a lot of fun, yeah.
You just hit upon something, too, I think is important about how that magic can touch people, and you don't know until so many years later that that's happened to me at this convention, in fact. There was a fellow who was telling me that I had influenced his life, and he's doing magic. I taught him magic 30 years ago.
Sure.
And he's in his 70s now, and he's still working at this restaurant. He said, anyhow, I'd kind of forgotten about it, but he's wanted to pull me aside and say, hey, you know, that you would touch me and change my life, and because it's the same thing. I think that other people who you don't know how this influences their lives so much that may later come back to help benefit you. Not that you're doing it for any, you know, hope of future advancement or something. It just serendipitously happens, I think, you know. So by being nice to somebody, sharing magic, you never know what kind of rewards you'll reap.
Right. And I think that magic touches people a lot deeper than what we think it does.
Exactly.
Because how many times have you run across this, Scott, where you come up to a new client, you say, yeah, I'm a magician. It's like, oh, no, we're not going to have another magician because we had a bad one.
Yeah.
So it's like, you haven't had a bad comedian? Oh, yeah, we have bad comedians all the time. But a bad magician kills everything because
sure.
It touches people really at a core level.
That's a very good
level.
Point. That's a good reason.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
So it's like, that's why I think that when you're successful at reaching a child or reaching an adult or
mm-hmm.
teaching somebody,
mm-hmm.
it goes right down to that little kid that's protected inside of us.
Yeah.
You know?
It stays with them for a long time.
Yeah.
Well, we're getting ready.
Yeah.
Stuart and I
perform.
Are going to be performing. That's right, doing some strolling magic here for the luncheon. And so, Stuart, thank you very much. And it's always good seeing you, my friend. And until next time, that was Stuart
sure.
McDonald for the Magic Word Podcast. This is Scotty out. Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and we are here in the dealer's room again, and with everyone's favorite dealer. I think I said that about every dealer. I know you say that all the dealers, don't you?
And no, I thought it was the only one, actually.
Harry Allen. Hey there, Harry.
Hey, what do you say, Scott?
So it's a great day to be at a convention, and you go to a ton of conventions. Now, I was asking Marshall about, he'd been to like about 7, I think, you know. How many of you guys have gone into this year?
I could just tell you in the last month, we were in California 3 weeks ago.
PCAM?
Yep, PCAM. The week after that, Magic Live.
Magic Live, yeah.
Week after that, in New York City, which was not a convention, but it was business and pleasure. And then I'm here now. As soon as I get off the plane in Florida, I'm at the SICA convention in Orlando. And then I'm back for a few weeks before we go to Atlanta, and then we get ready for the big one in Daytona in November.
Which one is Daytona? I've never heard of this one. What's it?
Oh, I think you've been there, actually. You were a star there.
Yeah,
the Daytona Beach Festival of Magic.
Yeah, tell me about that. Who's on the bill this year?
We got a great, great lineup this year. We've got John Armstrong, who was on the Fooling Penn and Teller. Tony Chapek, who's done a number of shows from Funniest Videos on down. Keith Fields, you know, Paul Gertner just fooled Penn and Teller.
Right.
He'll be there. Carl Hine, Heller Magic, not Helen Keller. Nobody would see a thing.
Yeah.
It's Heller Magic from Does Great Illusions. Jay Mattioli was a star on America's Got Talent.
Oh, yeah.
Victor and Diamond from Las Vegas, very, very good act. Of course, your own Texas magician, Dave Hira, who's a classic act. And, of course, Terry Lunsford does the castle a lot.
We haven't seen Terry at a convention for a while. Glad to see him back here.
It's going to be good.
Yeah.
Eric Olson, who works and runs Wizards in Orlando.
Mm-hmm.
And Scott Humston is a good children's magician who MCs our contest. and Mike Hummer, which is the main demo guy when Al Cohen was in business.
Oh, very
plus
good.
Plus, there's a surprise and a talent coming as well, which we haven't released yet.
Well, that sounds pretty cool. So it sounds like you got a pretty good lineup. And what are the dates again?
November 4, 5, and 6.
And that's going to be in Daytona.
In Daytona Beach, right, at a nice resort.
It is a very nice resort, much like this one, which we're right here on the beach. Just like I remember when we were there, we walked right outside and you're on the, in the sand immediately.
It's funny you say that because I lectured in the room in the opening lecture here. And the room that I lectured in reminded me of our convention. I kid you not, because you look out the window and there's the water.
Yeah, yeah. It was, that's right.
Very similar.
So you say you've been to a lot of conventions just within the last month, but I mean, that's throughout the whole year. Oh. I mean, how much time do you actually spend at home?
Well, this was unusual, the ones I just came back to back to back, but usually it's one or two a month.
Okay.
So when I'm not working, I'm in the shop for sure.
Yeah.
But it's part of the business. I mean, if you want to make this your living, you got to work it.
Which is my question I'm leading to is about brick-and-mortar magic shops. I've talked with other brick-and-mortar magic shops. I mean, you know, like H&R is pretty much an online thing. They don't have really a presence like they did at one point. And as you know, fewer and fewer shops are staying open. So what's your take on that?
Well, you got to be able to do all three, I think. You got to do mail order, you got to do conventions, and walk-in.
Mm-hmm.
We have a good combination with staff back at the shop plus staff on the road to do that. Mm-hmm. But if you just sit at home waiting for people to come visit you in the shop, I think you're missing a lot of business. And it takes a lot of work and a lot of money to do the road work.
I know you promote yourself, your shop, obviously, while you're on the road, when you're at conventions, etc., which is great advertising. But what other types of advertising do you do in order to let people know about it? I mean, understand advertising like a Magic Magazine and other Magic Magazines for magicians, but how do you let the general public to know where you are to walk in off the street? You're in a perfect tourist location, first of all.
We're in our 50th year celebrating in business.
Congratulations.
We're lucky to be next to a chocolate factory a couple doors away.
Wow.
And boy, do they have a promotion. They bring busloads of people to take chocolate tours of their factory, and we feed off of them. They come either before or after the tour, and they come visit our shop.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much, we work off their advertising, really. And then the magicians who are traveling around in Florida, they'll come visit us because they deal with us online or through the mail, what have you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically how we do it. We don't really do too much local advertising because we don't really make our living too much off the jokes and so forth.
Yeah.
We do off the magicians who find us off the internet.
Well, now, your partner, Irv Cook, I know his daughter, Becky, is one who travels with you a lot in order to do the things as well. Is this something that they're going to be taking over, or what is your long-term? I mean, you're still a young guy. You're only about 36, right?
There you go. So. Yeah, going on 38.
So what are your long-term plans for the shop? I mean, this is the 50th year.
Yep.
And you and Irv started it.
We did start it back in the 60s.
What's your future look like?
The future is interesting. I've got another, God willing, 10 years that I'm willing to work it and hit it hard. Becky's a lot younger, so she can take it over, and hopefully we'll look for somebody to come in and take my spot eventually. Mm-hmm. And kind of like a baton handoff. It's not just going to say, here it is.
Yeah, like Joe Stevens did with his son Mark.
You got it. Mm-hmm. It's a slow handoff. And it's age. It's just, that's normal. This happens.
It does. And but what are you finding also, as far as what's popular with magicians, what are they purchasing now? And have you seen a change? In other words, has it gone from the box tricks to the card tricks or to close-up or to stage, or is it still all the same kind of a mix? Or what's been recent trends in the magic business?
It's really funny because I think the young kids do a lot more card stuff. Mm-hmm. Not much personality involved. It's just card tricks that they learn off the internet.
Just juggling, hand juggling. Yeah,
yeah, I really mean there's entertaining. Remember the old Jay Marshall, all the guys who do the shtick, the Carl Ballantines, all those traditional dove magicians. It's a shame. It seems like they're fading away because you're not getting those stage entertainers a lot. It's obvious it's obviously in the conventions that you don't see as many younger people as you used to back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope, and I think it might be a pendulum. It'll swing back the other way eventually.
Mm-hmm.
But just right now, it's just you don't see a lot of it.
I was talking with someone about Mac Magic, which are the kind of the box and the painted things, you know, that are stand-up things. And I think it was Rick Fisher I was talking with, and he was saying that it's selling just as well or better than ever. Are you finding that to be the case for your shop?
It's a consistent.
Okay.
It's not over the top, but it's not a lull. It's consistently moves. It really does. There's still some people out there that are doing that type of magic. There's a lot of money to be made in birthday parties.
Yeah.
And when you're doing birthday parties, you want that box stuff because people want the wow when they're hiring you. They don't want to see card tricks.
Right. And if they would say something big and flashy and colorful.
If you want to make a lot of money, then you keep booking yourself kid shows on the weekends or whatever, and you can make some good pocket money, I call it, by tongue in cheek, but you can make a lot of money doing birthday parties if you work it as a business.
Yeah, well, you look at right now, that as we speak, that Danny Orleans is in the next room over here lecturing about Amaze Kids, I believe, and about how to entertain children, do birthday parties, and that kind of a thing. So I know that that is where there is a lot of money, and I was just talking, well, with Scott Hollingsworth, who is the talent director here, who had said he's really a corporate entertainer, but as the business for corporate entertainers kind of starts to dry up, or, you know, as the pendulum goes one way or the other, he's had to supplement income with doing birthday parties, which has not been his choice, but he has found, actually, I'm a pretty good birthday entertainer.
So. I think you'd be surprised on how many big and well-known magicians still do birthday parties.
Yeah.
They don't talk about it, but you'd be surprised on how many do it, because if you're not doing anything on a weekend and you put $500, $600, $800 in your pocket for doing a birthday party, exactly, why not? There's nothing wrong with it. $800, whether you're doing a birthday party or whatever. And that's where a lot of calls are. I mean, every parent wants to have a birthday party for their kid, usually, and magic is a great way to do that. You know, we make over 500 of some items. Many of them are larger, the box items and so on. Mm-hmm. And our guy is 8 months behind in product, in producing the items. And he does a good job on the stuff that he does. And literally, we give an item to add to his list. He says it's going to be 8 months, what have you. So there is still a call for it. And like I would lie to you, say it's better than ever. No, but it's consistent.
That's good. Well, as I say, that a magician who's not working is only fooling himself. So
that's funny. I like that line.
You really have to be out there and be entertaining, whatever it's going to be. You know, and if you're like Jeff McBride, say be a magician 24/7, and as you say, there are opportunities for people to children to be entertained. Take advantage of it. You know, make some money there too. And so you provide them with children's magician, corporate entertainer, everybody. You've got all kinds of tricks. What's a convention special that you can offer the listeners of the Magic Word right now?
I've got a phenomenal trick that's very, very modern. It's called the Magi's Mentor. Mm-hmm. What it is someone thinks. They don't pick. They think of an ESP card.
Okay.
On their cell phone that you don't go near, they dial a phone number, and on their phone, that person on the other end will tell them what ESP card they are thinking.
Okay.
It's a $50 trick. Convention here, or if you order it through the shop, plus postage through Monday, 20% off. So it'd be $40 instead of $50.
Yeah.
And it is genius. Anybody can do it. It could be on stage. It could be done close up. Because on stage, the person would take their cell phone and hold it up to the microphone, and the whole theater would hear what's coming over their cell phone.
Close up, stage, stand up, whatever.
Walk around, anything, yeah.
And it's their phone.
Their phone. You don't go near it, you don't touch it. So it's nothing that you have to fiddle with.
It's not like Call the Wizard kind of a
thing.
That's
correct. No. And it's funny that you said that, because people who know that Call the Wizard, they're blown out of the water, because wait a minute, you're not on their phone telling them to stop.
Right.
It's their phone that you don't even go near. It's funny you say that. The people who don't know about the Wizard are entertained, and the people who know the Wizard are doubly entertained.
That's fantastic. And so right now, they can order that. We go to your website, which is?
Is DaytonaMagic.com.
And be sure to use that product code of the Magic Word Podcast. Put that in the subject line or something in order to let Harry or Irv or whoever's working at the shop, because if you're ordering now, again, through Monday, that's going to be through the 5th. So this way, it's as if that you're at the convention right now and you're going to buy something that is being offered at a very special rate only to convention attendees, as if that you're here right now.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. You got to keep doing a great job you're doing, Scott, because the podcast is awesome.
Thank you. Thank you, Harry, very much. So, for the Magic Word Podcast, go over to DaytonaMagic.com and take advantage of that 20% discount. This is Scotty out. During the course of the convention, one of the events is the Order of Willard dinner or breakfast or brunch. We always have some sort of a meal whenever that we get together. And this is an organization for those who have 25 years of membership or more within the Texas Association of Magicians. Each year we highlight someone who gives us a very interesting speech on whatever topic. And this year it happened to be Chip Romero, who is a noted cruise ship magician. And because of that, he was able to become a noted collector. He's always had a fascination and interest interest in Doug Henning and also Doug Henning memorabilia when he was able to afford it, and now he does, and so he collects everything he can get his hands on. So as you're listening to this, if you happen to own anything that is related or owned by Doug Henning or have some story that you want to relate to him, please be sure to contact Chip Romero. He'd love to talk with you about that. While at Magic Live in Vegas a couple of weeks ago, he had part of his exhibit that was at the museum that was being shown along with just a few things also from the collection of Penn and Teller and from Norm Nielsen. Ricciardi's Buzzsaw was in there. Had David Copperfield things from his museum. A lot of things that were very cool. Blackstone Senior and Junior, a lot of wands and things. Anyhow, that Chip had a lot of his things that were shown there as well. So as a special feature for the members of the Order of Willard, there were about 30 or 40 of us, I guess, who gathered together, and we had dinner, and Chip was the featured speaker. So I set up the microphone. He allowed me to record this, and so it was in a banquet room, and the acoustics were less than favorable. It's kind of like a lecture hall, but this is the best we can do, and I tuned it up as best I could. So this is a little bit of information about his collection, and as he was walking around showing different things from his scrapbook, he kind of walked away from the microphone a little bit, but again, I try to pump that up a little bit. But if you're interested in learning more about what is in his collection, he talks a little bit about that in this presentation. So now, please welcome Chip Romero.
So just real quick, I'm fascinated with Henning, and I've always felt this way. And Brian at the Magic Castle, I was performing The Mirror one night because Jim Steinmeier came, and I changed my act for Jim. And I asked Brian, I said, what do you think? And Brian said, man, just keep your act the way it is. And he said, because Henning never got his due. And that just stayed with me. And Harrison wrote a beautiful book on Doug, but you really don't see, he doesn't get his due. And I honestly believe that December 26, 1975 is why we're all here. That really did change things that night. And so I've tried to put a little thing together, and I've got a lot of the artifacts. I love how this is intimate. I'm just gonna walk to you guys and show you everything. So to give you an idea, I guess I should say this real quick. About maybe 20 years ago, I bought two pieces of Doug's. I bought his disembodied princess, and I bought the gold box that was used in his wedding. They stayed in cases for years, and I didn't really think much about it. In 99, was when they had a secret auction that no one else knew about. There was only 14 people involved, and that's when I lost over $60,000 in contrast because I left the ship for this. That's how important this was to me. I really wanted the fire dome. I wanted the elevator. I wanted all that stuff. And so I actually lost contracts out, but I went and bought it all, and then I was on a ship within 3 weeks because I know all these people. Anyway, that's when it exploded. Well, 2 years ago, I get a call from Doug Henning's nephew, and he told me, he said that Jim Steinmeier called me and said, you're the only guy I should talk to. And I bought the entire family collection. What I brought here to tell you is maybe 1/50th of what I've got, and I'm still going through stuff. I've got 250 pounds of newspaper clippings alone. Mm-hmm. And I'm putting them all in chronological order, and I'm actually having them all laminated, and I'm gonna, but one hell of a book. I also talk about this on the cruise ships, and people walk up to me every cruise, someone will walk up while I'm signing autographs, and they'll say, I saw Doug Henning, or they've got some story for me. And I'm taking their names down, and I'm making beautiful essays that's going to go between all of the press clippings. So I can tell a story with the press clippings. By the way, I'm sure you didn't know this. Did you know Doug Henning was a hell of a baseball player?
No.
You did not know that. I know you didn't. Another thing, did you know Doug Henning was a mime?
Yeah.
A few people do. But I've got all the photo albums that his mother had of him being a mime when he was 16 years old, doing those rings with white face. He was also an all-star track runner. I don't think anyone knows this, but I've got his yearbooks. And here in the yearbook is him with the track team, and he's an all-star track runner, which goes against what we know about him having asthma and the lung collapse, which is true. But he was actually an athlete, and that's never come out. And so I can tell stories with these things, and I'm actually going to show you a lot of these things. Real quick, I own a lot of the costumes. Actually, there's only two of the dominant ones I don't own, and believe me, they're coming home soon. I'm not kidding. You know what I mean. But just real quick. This particular costume that Debbie's wearing here, that was used in the fourth special. That's when Gingy Lee appeared on the bridge when Doug was doing the butterflies. So they recycled that costume and brought it back into the 80s. That's like 78, so like 82-ish or something. They brought that back out. And then, of course, this is Doug here. I apologize for the boots, but you have no idea how hard it is finding mannequins in Doug's size. He was a very small person, and so I'm getting this all together just so you kind of see in the preview. So. The World of Magic, this is the script. Oh, well, that's what I'm going to tell you. The point is that this costume was bought by a collector, John Hootie, in Sweden. And this started, Lupe Nelson put a little thread on Facebook talking about Doug, and he jumped in and said, I've got one of his costumes, and I might want to sell it. Well, I went straight over to Messenger and bought it within 6 minutes, and that was it. And then the guy last year brought it to Magic Live to me. So I had to go all the way to Sweden to get Doug back. But Doug and Debbie are back together again, and I just think that's a hell of a display to start off with. Also, this is my passion, okay? Everybody that knows me knows I get way excited and get all emotional and stuff. But that's just what I do, and so I get excited about this. So December 26, 1975, everything changed. And I will quote Mike Caveney, that's what he liked so much that night. Caveney said on December 25th, on Christmas, if you were a magician, you were a dork, you were a nerd, you were a geek. But on December 27th, you were cool. And that is the God's honest truth. That's what happened. Everything changed that night because now the business people could look at the money involved that they could make. And then, of course, Doug Henning opened that door and Copperfield walked through it. But anyway, I'm just going to walk through here and just show you guys. And I'll let you look at it. Do me a favor. I'll actually pass this around. There's a few things that I won't let fingerprints on. But I will pass this around. You guys can look at it. Just don't crinkle the pages, okay? Just be normal. But this is the actual script of that night. And most people think I'm crazy handing that out. But just, again, don't crinkle the pages. But that's Doug's actual script. So, also, I wanted to go over some of his early stuff. And this was one of the highlights that in Scott saw. This is one of the highlights that people talked about. He's 17 years old, and this is his brochure. This is one of the hardest things to find, and I've got another brochure I'm going to show you. One of the absolute hardest things to find. I think it's interesting, the coloring, but he has this printed, and it says, don't be in the dark concerning entertainment. Okay? And you can see already at his age, 17 years old, he's a pretty slick guy. Because if I turn this over, you now see a rabbit in the hat, and you see his name, which is for Doug Henning. But he's 17 years old, and so you get that little guy walking there, and then you turn this over, and it says, hire a magician. So even at 17 years old, before he became Doug Henning, he was already Doug Henning, but he's not Doug Henning yet, right? Just like Eric Weiss wasn't Houdini yet. So imagine that, 17 years old, hire a magician, and it says, there we go. So once again, don't be in the dark, the little guy's walking. And if you turn it over, you'll see hire a magician, Hindi. So pretty cool, 17 years old. He was pretty slick already. I'll show you guys a walk real quick. This is a yearbook photo. This is him as a baseball player. And that's a baby photo. And this is, say that this is an inkling, I mean, I'm still going through a lot of this stuff. And it's pretty cool. You don't get to see this. And so Brian was very good to me. And I flew all the way to Linden, Washington. And he had just boxes and boxes and boxes of stuff. And I looked at about one of the boxes. All I basically did was sew. And I said, let's talk, which is probably not a very good business for me. So I saw exactly what I needed to see. I saw scripts from every single special. I saw scripts from the magic show. Also, there was a box of a big 3/4-inch tapes that I'm actually going to have transferred because it was a project that Doug did in Japan that very few people even know about. And so I'm going to try to bring that into a talk. And I've got a lot of his personal videos and a lot of things like that. So anyway, so that's baby pictures, and that's kind of cool. There's nothing like mother's love. All this came from his mother's scrapbook, to be honest with you. And that's his hand, and I just think that's kind of cool. And I know how moms are because my mom did scrapbooks for me that I still have from early on in the cruise ships. And mothers love stuff like this. But that's just kind of cool that that's his hand. And he had small hands, but then again, it certainly didn't hinder him. He was one of the best bowling magicians on the special. This is him also at a very young age. That is his sister, Carol. So this is before, that's him. That's her. And once again, he doesn't know who he is yet. I'm coming over there. He doesn't know who he is yet, but that, of course, is his sister, Carol. And I think we all have a Super X for our promo shots, because that's what it is. And I think we all have one. But that's his sister, Carol. So this is before Mars, hitting in Mars. And there was also a hint of Mars and Maya. Okay, we'll pass that to the other table. Okay, cool. Knock yourself out. All right. Is that a lighter? This is one of those great promo shots where when you take it, you just throw the ball up in the air and it looks like it's floating. So there wasn't a whole lot of work there. But again, it's just, you're going to see this guy because the 70s are here, but once again, he's not done yet. He's not that cool little guy that we're going to meet. This is really nice. This is his mother's ticket from the world of magic. That woman, she came out of the shuttle. You remember the very first picture? And that's actually, it's kind of neat. I've got different pictures that she signed in as well. But anyway, that's his mother's ticket. Something that also came out that a lot of people didn't know, when Doug introduced his mother to Bill Cosby, she freaked out. She could not believe that she was meeting a celebrity. And so Doug made it a point that every time he did a special for the celebrities to go meet his mother. And so that's how Mom got the signed ticket. So that's the ticket from that night. Let's see, what else? I got more.
Where is Debbie today?
Debbie is in North Carolina, and she's not taking calls as of yet, but that's getting ready to change. I'll be honest with you. Brian, who sold me all the stuff, I've actually hunted down three things that I know where they are, and I won't even tell anybody where they are because I've got to have them. But the point is that when Debbie and I start talking, that's the last of the Holy Grail left. And I'm actually trying to plan it where the last thing I get is Doug's rings, because that's what I want more than anything.
How long has he been gone?
He died February of 2000, so he's gone 16 years.
At age 52.
52, same age as Houdini. And I just turned 53, so yes, I'm out of the clouds. I'm a very superstitious person. So this is Doug's business cards. And so there's three of them there, and that's just different Doug Henning business cards. It's different types. You can see when he started making money, how he got the gold emboss. All right, I'll run back here real quick. But again, that's him as a kid. All right, so real quick, business cards. I actually collect business cards. If anybody here just check out, put this in your ear, they don't cost anything, and they're really easy to collect. And when you start getting looking at these after 20 years, you're surprised at how cool it is to collect. It costs nothing. I mean, my grandfather used to collect matchbooks. So it's kind of cool that you don't have to spend thousands and thousands of dollars to have this stuff. This was interesting, and I gave one of these to Copperfield. I had never seen one of these. I've never seen one of these in a book either. But this is a postcard that Doug used to answer his fan mail. And so there's a big chunk of them in his stuff, and they're all signed. But that's the only color picture as of yet that I know of in that outfit. As a matter of fact, when I gave one of these to David, because David has that outfit. And I should tell you, I started crying because I realized once David had that, it never happened. Don't sell anything to David. Go through a hole and never comes out. Okay? So, if anything, Doug Henning, really don't talk to David because I won. Okay. So, but that was kind of cool to answer fan mail. I think we all remember this is pretty iconic. And all of these pictures, by the way, are press releases. But this is pretty iconic. And we remember the three sword suspension. He certainly put that back on the map. That hadn't been around forever. And so that's pretty cool, and that's very iconic. And everything I'm showing you actually have, I have the three swords. So I actually have something from the magic show. And that's another thing I'm trying to do, is I'm trying to document things where seeing what I've got from each special. And I'm actually still going through actual costumes and stuff. So that's a very iconic pose, and that is, again, magic show. So here's something that never happened. He's standing on the site of Betterland. Never happened. It's Niagara Falls, and I have all of the paperwork involved with him trying to make this happen. I'm going through that. Mm-hmm. Also, I have the folder on the grant. Anybody here remember this? He got a grant that said magic equals art, and he got a grant from the Canadian government. I have all the correspondence between him and the government, and I think that's going to be an article in the magazine. I think it's pretty cool because that's, again, what changed everything. Okay? And I will invite you guys up here. And you can actually turn through these pages and look through them. I know you want to see the costumes close up. And I'm wondering if you guys, now how many of you saw the 2013 in Dallas? Did you all see it or no?
Yeah.
Okay. If you want me to, I'll perform the mirror again. Would you like to see the mirror?
Yes.
Okay, I had to ask because if you've all seen it, I don't know what you're doing. So, all right. So I'll tell you this real quick. This isn't Doug's mirror, but I know where the other one is. And you'd be surprised. I've been looking for this stuff. It didn't start this way. It just kind of escalated, and now I'm kind of, it's a fever. So, it really is. And I do two tributes to Doug in my shows on the ships. And my main show, I do a tribute with the newspaper. And then in my close-up show, I actually close the close-up show, a matinee, with this. And that's what I talk about, getting the family collection and what have you. So just to tell you, this one was made by Schmelk, the same guy that made it. And I recently found another one. And David bought one. We like our trick. This is a great trick. And I recently found another one that matches the same era. So when this one goes bad, I can still keep doing my little presentation. So because their bags are different now, by the way. But anyway, so I'll speak a little bit of Doug's words, and I'll speak a little bit of mine. Sometimes they say magicians are accused of using mirrors to perform their magic. Well, I am going to perform a piece of magic with a mirror. And it's old. So anyway, give it a hit. I want you to know it's a real half-inch plate-glass mirror. Give it a hit. Give it a hit. Give it a hit. All right, so a real half-inch plate-glass mirror, yes? You did good. Do you knit, Beverly? No? A crochet? Okay. Check out the needles, honey. And Pixie, check out the bag. The insides are inside. You'll find a dead snake. It's nice. Okay, so here we go. Yeah. Once again, half-inch plate-glass mirror. You probably figured this out already. The little bag is here to protect the secret of the illusion. The illusion is what they appear to be. They don't bend. They don't fold. So, and you probably figured this out. This is here to protect the secret of the illusion. And I just did this in Alaska, so the little sweater keeps the mirror warm. Thank you, Di Vernon. Right. Okay, now, I don't know what is happening. All right. So, in our world of reality, we all know that it's impossible to pass one solid through another solid. But in the world of magic, anything is possible.
Whoa.
See, that needle goes right through. Oh, hold your applause. The needle goes right through. It's almost like this is a liquid. And when Doug did this on The Tonight Show, he got a really big round of applause. I said, that's okay, you didn't know that. They had applause signs and everything. You didn't know that. Well, if you're amazed, and I can assure you I was, then nothing is going to prepare you for what my friend Doug did next. Before 20 million people in Johnny Carson, he held a half-inch plate-glass mirror between his hands and bent it. Isn't that just crazy? Crazy? As a little finale, you can see the needle goes right through, and I'll show you I truly have passed one solid right through another solid, and that, ladies and gentlemen, is Doug Hughes' mirror. So, any questions? Is there anything you want? Any questions? Because you can test me here, and maybe I can learn something.
What did Doug die of?
Liver cancer.
Really?
Which really sucks because he never drank or smoked. And yes, and he was a very small person. His lungs collapsed when he was small. But again, liver cancer makes no sense. And when I met him, when I was about 18 or 19, I was 18 when I met him. I remember on the dressing room door it said no smoking, and that's before. And that's before they said no smoking. And so he didn't want smoking even back then. But yeah, it was liver cancer. No one in the world knew except Doug, Debbie, and Doctor. No one else knew. And you guys might remember when Doug was sort of trying to make a little comeback. He did an interview. He was on Front of Magic. And he goes, I'm getting back into magic. Well, they later figured out that was just his way of saying goodbye. Because no one knew. And I think that Arian Black and I, she's got a cassette that I'm going to put it in the archives. And when she went to talk to him, he stood behind a screen and talked to her, and no one knew why. And of course, that was the chemo. He only did one chemo, and it almost killed him. So that's why it's. And so we know transcendental meditation doesn't heal you from inside.
I was going to ask you about transcendental meditation. Did he ever really learn to?
He claims he did, but no one ever saw it. Claims he did. There was a near the very end, and it happened on Mike. It wasn't Mike Douglas. It was something. It might have been Mike Douglas. Near the end, they were meditating 8 hours a day. And so he went there, and they set stuff up, and they started meditating, and they missed the spot.
So
they didn't even come out of the dressing room.
Did he meditate because of his cancer? Or did he start that prior?
He was doing that way before. That's his religion. Yeah. And so that's what he did. The TM movement, and Kornhauser's a big deal with it, too.
Because that was like in the 78?
It's right in there.
Yeah.
I don't know if he began TM. I'll tell you, I actually got a lot of brochures and stuff on his TM talks.
But he studied with Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, like
right.
Beatles.
I've actually got letters from Maharishi to him.
Whoa.
Yes. Yes, no, and that's. See, he went over to India, and that's when Vedaland became the idea. And their idea was to do Vedaland to enlighten everyone about transcendental meditation. It's just they thought they were going to do it in Orlando, sorry, Disney owns Orlando. You don't do anything without Disney saying yes or no. So it never happened. And that picture I showed you was the second site, which was Niagara Falls, which is why he ran for office to try to kill that red tape. And it never happened.
Explain kind of what Vetterland is, because a lot of people don't know. Originally,
it's
like
a theme park. It's a theme park.
In
supposed
India.
To be very No. It's supposed to be in Orlando.
I thought he was going to then move it to India.
You know what? I'll tell you if I know for sure.
Okay.
I know for sure Orlando and Niagara Falls.
Canada,
I know that
right.
for sure. But,
okay.
but I check it. I mean, I'm doing more and more research every day. And I don't want to be wrong right now, especially because I'm at a point to where I will become the Ratner of him.
So what office did he run for?
Hmm?
What office did he run for?
It's something like the Natural Party. Something. It's Canadian. I don't know.
Was it representative or senator or
it,
something?
No,
like
it wasn't a senator. It was something like the party, and it's I don't know Canadian politics.
Okay.
So I can't answer that. But he was doing that to try to get that red tape out.
Did he tour through China?
Working?
Mm-hmm.
No. Mm-hmm. And right after he retired, he moved to Holland and stayed in Holland for quite a few years because no one knew him there. He went to India and did all that. They tried to do the transcendental meditation, but he later moved to Holland. This is what kills me. He only took four or five things with him. He took the origami and the pole levitation, the very first ever built, and they rotted in a farm in Holland. Killing me. I mean, I was just like, you got to be kidding me. But he wasn't using them, and he took them there in case he wanted to do a trick or two. And basically, near that time, all he would do is take his little suitcase and do his rings and his mirror, a few things. That's all he ever did after that. So, but one day, whenever I do this book, there's going to be a DVD in it, and that DVD will be a bootleg of him actually, that very few people see it. It's a bootleg of him doing some of the stuff. And it's crazy because it's not all edited and beautiful. And when you watch this, I think Chezaday is the one that actually taped it. And you can just see, it's just a guy holding a camera. And you can see just how great he really was. Just standing there, being in his presence in a high school gym, he was still Doug Henning. He was the most relaxed magician on stage I've ever seen in my life.
Yep.
Another thing I want to say, and it's good for our magic, treat your magic very important, because that's what made the shadow box so damn incredible. The way he ever so slightly looked at that box, and the way he ever so slightly moved, he was very interested in what he was doing, and you can't help that. I think it was Eugene Berger that says, if you kind of blow your magic off, then that's exactly what your spectators will do. They'll just blow it off with you. But all of a sudden, you really say, look, this is important. They'll get on board with you. So I'm just saying that was really important about Doug. Doug was so relaxed, the way he talked just effortlessly, which is hard to do. I think it's because he was natural. But also, he was just so relaxed. I mean, you could not help but just relax with him. You never saw him. I actually saw him ruin I saw the bump box ruined. I saw the mirror would not come up, would not disengage. And so the whole show is over. Basically, if you don't know, things that go bump in the night, it was a Charlie Reynolds' idea. Basically, you have a box that's folded down, so there's no base or anything like that. And so Doug, they bring the three sides up, and he'd hold a sheet. And basically, it's a person that he's appearing, and the person would jump dance around under the sheet, just in case you haven't seen it. And he would do this three times. So he had like red, green, and blue sheets. And then Doug would get in the box, and they'd close the box, and these three sheets would come forward. Well, the two were girls, and the middle one was Doug Henning. And I don't know if you guys remember that, but I remember it in 76. Elmer fell off the damn couch. I had never seen anything like that in my life. That with the Colta chair was two of the most incredible things I'd ever seen. So that's the bump box. And what was I going to story?
You were about to reveal the secret.
No, I'm not
it says broken in the back.
Something really cool.
It's in the back of the room.
Okay. So if you don't know how it works, now you are. We're magicians here. But basically, the way the it's a million-dollar mystery, meaning it's an actual mirrored tube that comes out of the back of the backdrop. And if you think about this, if you were to take this mirror and you were looking at it this way, so if there's a backdrop right here, then that's going to reflect to that backdrop, and you think you're looking straight through. It's one of the most ingenious principles I've ever seen. Well, anyway, one show, they could not disengage the mirror tunnel, and it just sat there. He did not show it empty, and there was no tiger or anything. But that's the only time that I saw Doug have a mistake on stage, and I saw 17 shows. So that's pretty damn good to have that much stuff going on backstage and not see problems. So.
You know who doubled for it?
I do not. It was a guy named Wayne, and I can tell you that because his name are in the other costumes. And Glenn Priest was his double for the water torture cell. And Glenn Priest was the guy that did all the batteries and stuff in the. It's a shame he died about 7 years ago, but I'm actually tracked down Brian Lumley, who was his
But that's
son.
Why I was asking if Debbie was taller than him. They were the same height.
You know what they used to call him? They used to call him little imps. They said that they were made for each other. They were arm in arm. They were at the hip the second they met, and that was it. They just and rumor has it, and I kind of believe this, Brian says she's still not over his death. That's what. Another thing, I think Brian wants to get the stuff from Debbie and sell it to me and make a profit. I know that, how that's
going. And no children.
No children. So, and Doug, it's again, I'm going to put some things together that we don't know as of right now, but we'll see, because there's so much time, to learn from this.
And at that time, you know, long hair was not in. It was not part of the hippie movement.
Or before it wasn't in, and then he kind of did it too long. But at that time, things have changed. Copperfield had come out. When Copperfield banished the Statue of Liberty, it was kind of over. And also, Doug was on his way into heavy transcendental meditation. So Doug basically walked away. He was making about $4 million a year back then. And he just walked away from it. Just flat out walked away from it. And that's mind-boggling to me. But Doug kind of did whatever Doug felt like doing. And Doug is the epitome of an artist that can't balance a checkbook. He's the epitome of that. He just kind of did whatever he wanted. And he was able to do that because everybody else was taking care of his money and stuff. Because he just wanted to share the wonder, as he said. So, yeah.
So two questions.
Sure.
First of all, my recollection is the very first television special. Is that where Fickle Nickel and Shimada was on the first one?
Absolutely, sir.
Okay. So I remember every bit of that show, but I don't know how that show came about. Because here he is, this Broadway guy. Do you know how the show that televised?
David Susskind.
How Shimada and those guys wound up on that show, because it was...
Okay, I don't know how Shimada ended up on the show. I know that Doug was very successful in the magic show, and David Susskind went to see him and said, we ought to do a television special. And Doug said, now I'm too busy. And he sent somebody there every day for 7 days at the door. And so Doug would come out to the door to sign the autographs for the 10 or 20 people that was there, and the guy would say, man, we got to do a television special for 7 days. And then Doug talked with David Susskind, and Doug said, I don't even want to touch it if it's not live. He goes, I don't want to touch it. He goes, they're going to think it's camera tricks. I have nothing to do with this. And he goes, I want stars on it. And he said, two other things. And Susskind goes, it's done. You can have it. He went, what? he thought that they were going to go, there's no way. And then when they went to meet with Mobile, they said, what are you going to pitch? And he sat down and he said, Houdini's water torture cell. He goes, it hasn't been seen in 80 years. He goes, we'll do it. He goes, I disappear from the water torture cell. They went incredible. And him and Susskind walked out, and he goes, now I got to figure out how the hell to do it. Yeah. No idea how to do it. And Charlie Reynolds went looking for a water torture cell. They found one that would not work. So they ended up having to build one. Owens built it for them.
Okay, so the last thing to that is, I'm sure everyone in this room knows, but John Cornelius downstairs
is the man.
Fickle Nickel opened that show. He's selling it now. Open that TV show. Do you have an interview recorded with John Cornelius about how all that happened?
You better do it. Scott, you
need to do it. I have talked with John about that. I know what you're talking about.
But yes, I mean, I like what you're saying.
Oh, for his thing.
John is here is the time to get this done.
Yeah. I'm listening. Okay. Thank you for your guidance.
I agree that you're here.
No, we've talked about it. He was even surprised when Doug took it. He was even surprised. I don't think John knew it was opening the special until he saw the special.
Matter of fact, that should be an hour program of this convention.
Well, has anybody ever tried performing a trick? Has anyone tried Fickle Nickel?
Yeah.
Okay, just real quick, if you want to try to learn it, you need to do it in this condition. And you can see the string flash on the special. You can actually see it flash. But the one thing to try to do, it's just because everybody does it wrong. And Cornelius will tell you this, because we've had talks about it. The coin is here, you do this, the coin comes over, you show the hand empty. Everybody does this. They turn their hand around and grab it. And that sucks. You don't want to do it like that. You want to close your hand and then turn around and let it fall into your hand.
Yeah.
And it just looks better. You watch a lot of guys do it, they show the hand empty and then they
do Copperfield
this.
Did a variation of that on an opening for the Learjet Vanish that he did. And he had a small model of a Learjet in his hand, and he was like in the cockpit of the Learjet, and he showed that, he turned his hand over and it was gone, then back again. So he did the same thing as an opening. Was that what it was?
It was a loop.
It was a loop. Similar kind of a thing though, but yes, that's right. He did
and it was
wash
great.
His hands.
No, it looked great. It looked great when he's in the jet, he went like that.
Right.
But again, Doug is connected here, and it goes around here.
Right.
And it fooled everybody. It's here's an interesting thing on the first special, the idea for the jukebox. They got all excited about that and thought they'd be able to show it empty and really get after it. When they got it on stage, it was so badly built and so undeceptive that they just shot right through it real quick. He just basically went like that and closed it because the prop just could not do what it was asked of. But it still worked out okay. And that was the first illusion on the first special that changed magic. So I agree with you. I think the Fickle Nickel needs a little more love too. But that's a hell of a trick. I used to play with it in the bars and stuff, and it's it works. I mean, because the thread, I mean, you just put the coin in your pocket, so you're always
how
ready.
How chose that to be the opening of their main? I mean, all the it's things crazy. You could do kind of come down.
Well, did you see the script? It's got to be in the script. It's going to say, wherever it is, I'm just saying, David, when the script, or whoever's got it, Joe whenever the script gets to you, like, you'll see Doug's there with a nickel. And so,
you know what the different color pages mean, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know what the different color pages mean.
I do not, Frank.
It means different revisions.
Okay.
Each time you do a revision, you change the color.
Okay. I won't argue
this with is that. Not how the script was. This was bound for Doug afterwards.
I believe that. Because there's no pencil marks. In all the other scripts, yeah, there's lots of writing.
Because the way the scripts are, there's
I don't believe that.
But when they do changes, as you go through, you figure it out, you change the color pages so that way you know which stuff has changed.
I like it.
That's
I like
vision control.
Yeah. I like it. But again, I've got five scripts from Merlin, and there's all kinds of things written in. So maybe it was just early or whatever.
But Merlin,
this, I do believe you.
That's a TV
made,
show.
I think this was made after. I agree.
No, that's the script they bound it as the color.
Oh, I got that. But I'm just saying that, like for instance, it doesn't have Doug Henning, or it doesn't have Gene Anderson's script in here.
Right.
It just says Doug will perform the newspaper. I don't think they didn't put that script in there.
Yeah, because yeah. There probably another page that went, and that's not the final.
I don't doubt you. That's very popular. I believe it. So, anything else? Thanks for asking me to be here. I who knew at Magic Island when I really sucked and you let me work? I just want to say this real quick. I want to talk about Scott.
We're going back to that.
Scott let me do 14 shows a night for $100. I knew better. I did nothing but stand-up material and kiosks. That's all I did, and I was working on my cruise ship acts, and I did a rope sational, and I did an egg bag. But anyway, you do 14 shows a night, things start to fall together. Just real quick, I used to have a cassette recorder under there, and I'd record the shows, and then because I'd drive back home. I live 2 hours from Houston, so I'd drive back home. On the way driving back home, I'd put a fresh cassette in the cassette recorder and put that cassette in my car and drive home and listen, and I'd get two or three lines a weekend. And then I'd put those three lines in there. And so I'd keep going back, and we did that for 9 months. You worked my tail off, but that's the only way I could have been ready for cruise ships.
A kiosk was a room that only seated about 13, 14, 15 feet. So it was really close-up magic that he was really doing stand-up in. It wasn't all close-up.
Mm-hmm. And Mr. Ahmed, he put up with me. He goes, I can hear you yelling in there. He goes, you need to lower your voice. And I'm like, what, man? I get excited. He's like, well, try not to be so excited. I'm like, whatever. He'd slam the door and scream, and I'd run around. But anyway, just saying, since we're going to talk about Magic Island tonight, every single close friend I have was met at Magic Island. I mean, my God, he worked everybody. I think everybody worked Magic Island at that time. But anyway, so who knew? A plumbing salesman that got to hang out at Magic Island became a cruise shipman. And I'm not known as a cruise ship magician, damn it. I've got 1,000 weeks on cruise ships. Everybody thinks of me as a collector. Fair enough. I'm not going to be remembered. I'm not exaggerating. I've kept so much stuff because I guess I got that from my mother. But I can chart my entire career from '88. Not every ship, but not everyone, but so many of the cruise ship news and stuff that my name's in. I can actually lay it all down and go from '88 all the way to now and tell you where I was at certain points of the year. It's just something I do. But again, no, not nobody. Again, I'm not kidding. 1,000 weeks, I can prove it. I can document. I can show you contracts, and everybody knows me as the hitting collector. So I'll take it.
One last thing.
Sure.
Tell everybody
thanks for bringing that up. So you can see how pretty this is here. And I'm still working on this, but I'm going to take at the hobby shops, they have the metal, like little metal rods, tiny little rod. Well, I'm going to put two little holes in here. And we're going to get old Debbie. With the glory.
Yeah,
that's got to set the old girl up. Yeah,
you
got so this ought to look pretty damn cool.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Square the rack, square the bra, right?
So if you guys want to come up and take a close up, that's fine with me. And thanks for having me.
All right, well, we just finished the Saturday evening show with the Magic Island Show, and one of the people I've got with me right here, we just heard a little bit earlier on the podcast, who talked about Doug Henning, and that's Chip Romero. Hello again, Chip.
Hello. Hello, everybody.
And one of the things that was discussed right there was the Fickle Nickel routine that opened up the first Doug Henning special, and I've got with me then John Cornelius. Hello, John.
Yes. Hello there.
So, tell me, how did Doug contact you? Did he see the trick? You showed him the trick, or how did that come about?
Actually, Charlie Reynolds called me up, which at one time was working with Doug, and he remembered me doing the Vanishing Nickel or the Fickle Nickel, and he said Doug might want to do that as on his special.
Yeah.
And I said, okay, yeah, I'd let him do that. That'd be fine. And then a few weeks later, I got an order from Twyla Duncan, was somebody that was working with Doug, and she wanted to order two nickels, so I sent them to Doug, and that's the last I heard of it until I saw the special.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
So that was obviously way before the internet, and so you hadn't filmed it or anything and done a video of any of the performance.
Right, uh-huh.
Sure.
Actually, I did... research on my smartphone. I said Fickle Nickel Doug Henning, and it brought up a video of Doug doing it.
Yeah, for the very one.
Right. Uh-huh.
Chip, anything you want to ask him about?
You know what? Just because John Cornelius is here, let him. Have you ever asked him about how the Muscle Pass came about?
No. Tell me about that.
Since you've got Mr. Cornelius, yeah, this is a great other great bit.
Good. Tell me about the Muscle Pass.
Well, the Muscle Pass basically is in an old magic book called Principles of Deceptions. And it says that a coin can be propelled from the one hand to the other by contraction of the muscles in the palm of the hand.
Yeah.
And way back, I don't know, in the 70s, Chuck Smith was using the Muscle Pass in a certain way to...
Oh, I didn't know Chuck would do that. Okay.
Yeah, uh-huh. And so I saw Roger Klaus do what Chuck was doing, and I went home and figured it out myself. I said, it's got to be going from this hand to that hand, and I spent about a week learning it, and I mean, I didn't know anything about it, but then all of a sudden the coin jumped. I said, I bet that's what it is. So I practiced, and for weeks and weeks, till I had bruises and calluses in my hand.
Yeah.
And I asked my wife, you've seen a coin fall down, have you seen one fall sideways? And she said, what would it look like if it fell up? And I said, I don't know. So I made it fall up, and she started laughing. And I said, what's so funny? She said, go look in the mirror. And I looked in the mirror and saw that coin fall up, and I just started laughing. So I've been doing it ever since then. And
yeah.
I got the height, you know, little by little.
Yeah.
And one thing I might mention, the main mistake everybody makes when they do it, they should drop the coin in the hand, then open their hand, and the hand should be just dead. Don't move at all for about 2 seconds, and then the coin goes up. Most of them will drop it into the hand and then kind of flip it up as they're turning their hand over.
Yeah, like kind of a toss almost.
Right. Mm-hmm. But you have to catch it and then just stop and then have the coin go straight up. And that's what makes the whole trick.
Did you start calling it the Muscle Pass, or where did the name come from for that?
Well, actually, it was Arthur Buckley's Muscle Pass, I guess.
Oh, he called it the Muscle Pass then, too. Okay.
I think that's what he called it, yeah.
Yeah. Phenomenal. Well, great. Thank you very much. Alrighty. I appreciate it then, John. So now you know the origin then of the Muscle Pass and how that worked. And also about the Fickle Nickel. That's good. And you'd come up with the idea of the Fickle Nickel originally.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Then. That's right.
Right.
And what year was that, approximately?
About 1972.
Okay.
I was sitting there watching Johnny Carson, and I said, what would be a good trick you could do? And I worked it all out, and the next morning I tried it, and it looked pretty good, so I kept trying it. And then I did it, and I took it to a convention in Abilene, and I must have fooled at least 100 magicians. Everyone I showed it to had no clue, and I showed it to Di Vernon, and he was going around telling everybody, hey, John, show that nickel thing to this guy. Because he wanted to see it over and over
Yeah, yeah.
And then I caught him in the lobby. He was kind of thinking in deep thought. And I walked up and he said, oh, yeah, what are you using, tape or wax? I said, on what? He said, oh, that nickel thing. I said, no, neither. So I taught it to Di Vernon.
To Di Vernon?
Yeah, and he did it around the castle.
That was funny. That's funny. Well, very cool. Thank you very much. I appreciate the stories on both of those as well. So now we know a little bit more about the history of the Muscle Pass as well as the Fickle Nickel. So that was John Cornelius and Chip Romero.
Thanks a lot, Scott Wells.
Okay, we'll see you later. And for the Magic Word Podcast, this is Scotty out.